thank you for taking the time to listen to this life-changing message from the Ministry of Faith Bible Chapel. We hope this message will encourage you in all parts of your life. At the end of this message, you will hear more information on how to contact our church family, as well as directions for you to visit us for any of our worship services. Until then, join us for the service in progress.
So, trying to get the bat to the ball was near impossible. I had private batting lessons. I mean, I had everything that a kid could have to try to be a success in baseball. It didn't matter. I couldn't hit a baseball. But the phraseology, when life throws you a curveball, has become part of our vernacular. It's a phrase that we use in America to describe a certain thing happening in life. Now, in baseball, there's a couple main kinds of pitches. The first one is just called the fastball. And the fastball, the object is the pitcher pitches it as hard as he can, as fast as he can, right down the middle at you. And the whole object is to get it by the batter so fast he does not have time to swing or does not have time to find out where the ball is. Sometimes the ball will move a little bit depending on the pitcher, but a lot of times it's pretty much just straight ahead, throw some heat, throw some speed, get it by the batter. What the curveball does is the curveball is coming down. It's a slower than a fastball, so it's already the speed's kind of been changed up, so the batter's a little off balance. And then as soon as it gets to the plate and you start looking at that ball and you're thinking, this ball's moving kind of slow. You know, I think I can hit this ball. And you start the swing, all of a sudden the ball just breaks and curves and you miss it by half a foot. And it's just a frustrating feeling when you thought you had a home run, but instead you end up with a strikeout. So we use that phrase in America to say this, that sometimes in life, it looks like things are really going to go good. It looks like it's going to be a home run. And then at the last minute, life throws you a curveball. At the last minute, when it looks like things are turning out, there's disappointment. There's heartache. You feel let down. And you say, wow, I didn't expect it to turn out quite like that. How many of you have had an experience like that? How many of you would say right now, somewhere in your life, you would say life right now is throwing me a curveball? So we know what that feels like. And the wilderness wanderings were one curveball from God after another. Now, what I'd like you to do is pull out a Bible. If you've got a Bible with you, you can use yours. We've got Bibles in back of the seats right in front of you. I'm going to be doing tonight's message out of the New King James. So if you've got a Bible in a different translation, you want to read along in that, it doesn't bother you if the wording's not all exactly the same, that's okay. But if you want to use the same translation I'm using, pull out one of those pew Bibles, the New King James, and turn to the book of Exodus. The book of Exodus is the second book in the Bible. So if the Bible's new for you and you're saying, boy, I don't know if I can find a book, this is a great one to start on. The book of Exodus is easy to find. It goes Genesis, Exodus. And then turn to chapter 15 in the book of Exodus. Are you getting there? So let's start reading in verse 20. Exodus chapter 15. Verse 20. Then Miriam, the prophetess, the sister of Aaron, took the timbrel in her hand, and all the women went after her with timbrels and with dances. And Miriam answered them, "Sing to the Lord, for he has triumphed gloriously. The horse and its rider he has thrown into the sea." And then in verse 22, it says, so Moses brought Israel from the Red Sea. Then they went out into the wilderness of Sur. And they went 3 days in the wilderness and found no water. Now, when they came to Marah, they could not drink the waters of Marah, for they were bitter. Therefore, the name of it was called Marah. And the people complained against Moses, saying, what shall we drink? So he cried to the Lord, and the Lord showed him a tree. And when he cast it into the waters became sweet. There he made a statute and an ordinance for them, and he tested them. And said, if you diligently heed the voice of the Lord your God and do what is right in his sight, give ear to his commandments and keep all his statutes, I will put none of the diseases on you which I have brought on the Egyptians, for I am the Lord who heals you. Then they came to Elim, where there were 12 wells of water and 70 palm trees. So they camped there by the waters. Well, here's the context. The story of the wilderness wanderings starts in Egypt. And as Blake shared, they were in bondage. They were in slavery. Their lives were, they were bitter. They were hard. And they cried out, God, give us a deliverer. God, take us out of this place. And finally, after God had perfected the cry in their heart, God raised up Moses as their deliverer, as their human leader who would lead them out of Egypt and lead them towards the promised land. And of course, the Pharaoh stands up, and most of us are familiar with the story. You've either read it in the Bible, or you've seen it in a movie, or you've heard about it somewhere in a kid's storybook, but it's all true, that God brought plagues and judgment on the nation of Israel for the way they had treated his people and for refusing to let them go. And finally, they said, get out of here, go, our whole nation is destroyed, get out of here. And so the Egyptians marched out. They're feeling really good about themselves. And God brings them right to the edge of the Red Sea. The Red Sea was uncrossable, at least uncrossable to them, because they didn't have boats to cross in them. And all of a sudden, the Pharaoh kind of comes to his senses and says, why am I letting all these slaves go free? So he gets his army and his chariots, and he comes after the children of Israel. The children of Israel start to cry out to the Lord again, and then the Lord parts the Red Sea, and they go through on dry land. And you've probably seen it somewhere, an image of it, a painting of it. You've seen it in a movie. And it's hard for us to imagine what that must have been like. 2 million-plus people going through on dry land, and on either side, there's water. I mean, imagine just the terror of going down into that opening in the Red Sea and just hoping it stays open till you get out on the other side. And they went through it, and then the Pharaoh and the Egyptian army came through it afterwards, and God closed the Red Sea on them, destroyed the finest army in the world in a moment, and there they stood on the other side in freedom, their enemy destroyed, the captive defeated, the captors defeated, and they were free. And that's when this story picks it up. Miriam, who is the sister of Aaron and the sister of Moses, begins to lead the women out in this beautiful celebration. It's a picture of worship, what worship should be like for us. When we come together for worship, why do we lift our hands? Why do we sing with all our hearts? Why don't we just sit around stoically? Because God, through Jesus Christ, has done even a greater work for us than what God did for them. They were brought out of an earthly captivity. We've been brought out of an eternal captivity. They were brought out of and away from earthly death. We have been taken out of eternal death. And so for us, the proper response is, and some of you guys will say, well, that was the women who were worshiping Roger. But David later on shows us that this isn't just for the women. This is for the guys too. David was a warrior. David was a guy that knew how to kill people. He was a worshiper too, just like Miriam. And he worshiped the same way that Miriam worshiped. So whether you're a lady, whether you're a guy, this is for us, that we need to learn how to worship. We need to learn how to rejoice. We need to learn how to say, God, thank you for the deliverance that you have given to us. But it says that in verse 22, so Moses brought Israel from the Red Sea. Then they went out into the wilderness of Sur. Everybody say wilderness real loud. Wilderness. And the wilderness is kind of like that song, the sleepless nights, the not always understanding what God is doing, the bringing us from an experience where God has worked a mighty deliverance, a mighty miracle. Our emotions are on cloud nine. We are sky high excited. And then all of a sudden, he brings them out and he drops them right into the wilderness. What was the wilderness like? Well, what it was like physically, when we think about wilderness, maybe we think about like the sand dunes down in southern Colorado and these majestic sand dunes, and they have them also in California in the Mojave Desert, these huge sand dunes, and they kind of have a majestic, almost mountain look to them. But that isn't what that wilderness looked like. That wilderness was a place not of sand, but more of think gravel, think you know, the kind of ground cover that if you were to walk on it in bare feet, it would just kind of tear your feet up. There was some vegetation around, but not very much. There weren't cities. There were a few nomads that would live off the wilderness. But what it was a place of scarcity. There was very little food, very little water. There was not rivers that ran year-round. The only time that there would be water running would be when there was thunderstorms, and then there would be water running through. For the most part, it was all dry, and certainly for a nation of 2 million people, it was way, way under what was needed. Now, in 2 weeks from now, Pastor Russ Fraze is going to be coming and talking about the manna and how God fed them. But all of a sudden, they find themselves in this place of scarcity. And God does the same thing in our life. He puts us in places of scarcity, where maybe there's barely enough money to pay the bills. Or maybe there's barely enough emotion, there's barely enough commitment to hang on to the marriage. Heard a great quote today, I'll just throw it in, nothing to do with the rest of my message, but it says, we want to get things in minutes, but marriages are built in decades. So that's for someone out there tonight. Marriages are built in decades. So we're in these places of scarcity, and when we're in these places of scarcity, God uses them to draw us closer to Him. He uses those sleepless nights. He uses those difficult times so that we would be drawn closer to Him. But notice what it goes on to say here in verse 22. It says, so Moses brought Israel from the Red Sea. Then they went out into the wilderness of Sur. And they went, and what's it say there? How many days? Say it real loud. Now I want you to think about this for a moment. 3 days. 3 days since they walked on dry ground through a sea. 3 days since God swallowed up all of their enemies. Now, we've already read a little bit of the story, so you know what they're about to do. They're about to murmur. They're about to complain. 3 days. Now, I could maybe give them a little bit more grace if it said, and 3 years later. But we're talking 3 days. 3 days, and they're already in a position of faith. Faith crisis. But I can give them grace. You know why? Because I can do the same thing in 3 days. How about you? Anybody else can turn it around from the height of faith, the height of, wow, God's phenomenal, God's victory, God can do anything, I can believe God, He's the miracle working God. Anybody else turn that around in 3 days? You know, Stephen, when he was talking about the wilderness time in Acts chapter 7, he calls this group of people, the church in the wilderness, the congregation in the wilderness, to draw this continuity that, you know, they're not all that different from you and me. In fact, they're a lot like you and me. So they went 3 days, and it says that they found no water. That's their curveball. That's life throwing them a curveball right there. They come out, there's victory. And many times our expectation is, God, if you've done a great victory, you're just going to keep doing great victories. In fact, the Red Sea is just going to be my experience all my life long. And many times we have conversion experiences like that, where God brings us out of the world or somewhere in our Christian walk, we're faced with an incredible crisis, and God brings us through it, and we just feel like, boy, this is it. The tables have turned. Happy days are here again. Red Sea partings. It's my middle name. Everything is going good from now on. But the truth of the matter is, Red Seas and finding no waters are part of the cycle of life. Miracle times, you're going to have them in your life. Thank God for miracle times. But no water times, you're going to have those in your life too. And the question for us tonight is, what's your no water right now? What's the wilderness that you're in right now that you expected to find water, you expected to find nourishment, you expected to find God's blessing, but instead, you found no water. And then in verse 23, it says, now when they came to Marah, and we'll stop right there for a moment, in this parched land, wherever there was water, vegetation would grow. And so as they're traveling through the wilderness for 3 days, and they're for the first time ever experiencing the wilderness. Now, Moses had experienced the wilderness before because he had been in Midian on the backside of the desert being trained by God for 40 years for this moment. But the nation of Israel has been in Egypt, which is fed by the Nile, and there's irrigation. So their water is being brought to them on a constant basis from the Nile River. So for the first time ever in their entire lives, they're facing this no water moment. So here they are going through the wilderness, trying to figure out what in the world is life like outside of Egypt. And then they see it. Off in the distance, hope. There's a few trees. There's some vegetation. And the word begins to travel through the company of people. Hey, up ahead, we see vegetation. We see a few palm trees. You know, we think there's water up ahead. And hope begins to rise up in their hearts that we found the water. We're not going to die out here. We're going to be okay. You can only go 3 days without water. If you go beyond 3 days without water, that's when you start to die. So they're on the edge. Their water has run out. Whatever they brought with them is all gone now. And they're getting to the point of panic. They're getting to the point of this could be death here. We may not make it. We might be dying out here in the wilderness. And all of a sudden, hope begins to spring up in their hearts, just like it does in ours. So it says in verse 23, now when they came to Marah, here's what they found. They could not drink the waters of Marah, for they were bitter. Everyone say bitter. Therefore, the name of it was called Marah. What does this show us? Well, the first thing it shows us is where I got the title for the message, Bittersweet. And that is that every life is a combination of the bitter and the sweet. There's no such thing on this earth, as that song said, reminding us that this is not our home. There's nothing here on this earth that is totally sweet. I mean, even our relationship with the Lord, because we don't understand what God's doing, and we're so limited in our ability to understand God and why things happen and what's going on, even from our perspective, sometimes it doesn't seem entirely sweet either. Are you with me? But think about our earthly existence. There's a thing called the honeymoon phase. The honeymoon phase is you get a new job. And boy, you think, oh, my boss is great. My coworkers are great. My job is great. And then what do you find out after a couple weeks? My boss is a jerk. My coworkers are lazy and lousy. And I hate this job. Or maybe not quite that severe. But we find out that whether it's your marriage, whether it's your kids, whether it's your health, whether it's your church, everything on this earth is a combination of the sweet and the bitter. And part of the cycle of life is we have these honeymoon phases, but then we fall into realizing that this life, this world isn't perfect. But here's something else that it speaks to us. There are times in life when situations turn completely bitter. And those are some of the most difficult to take. Because it's one thing when, you know, it's good, but it's not perfect, and that's just kind of the way it is. And you learn to be content. You learn to move forward. You learn to make things work. That's just life. That's just growing up. Be a big boy. Keep going. But there's times in life when our expectations, when what we thought was going to happen, it turns completely bitter in our hands. And some of you have experienced things like that. In fact, I would say probably all of us, somewhere along the line, have experienced things that turn completely bitter. That we looked from a distance and we had hope it's going to work out, it's going to be great. But it turned bitter. And we had to deal with the realities. Some of you have been through failed marriages where the marriage just turned completely bitter. Maybe your spouse left you. Others of you have been in financial situations that turned completely bitter. Some of you are dealing maybe with health situations right now. You're waiting for God to heal you. But in the meantime, it's completely bitter. And life finds those times that are completely bitter. But I want you to look at another place in Scripture where this bitterness is talked about. I've got it up on the screen. It's the story of Naomi from the book of Ruth. And she's gone out, and she went out with her husband and her two sons. And while she's gone outside of the borders, a famine drove her outside of the borders of Israel. Her husband dies, now she's a widow, and then in that culture, your sons would take care of you. Both her sons died. So now all she has is her two daughters-in-law, and in that society, there was very limited what women could do to make money. So she's basically destitute. She's basically poor. She goes back to Israel. She goes back to Bethlehem. And here's what she says in Ruth chapter 1, beginning in verse 19. Now the two of them, which is Naomi and Ruth, the two of them went until they came to Bethlehem. And it happened when they had come to Bethlehem that all the city was excited because of them. And the women said, "Is this Naomi?" But she said to them, "Do not call me Naomi." The word Naomi means pleasant. "Do not call me pleasant. Call me Mara. Call me bitter. For the Almighty has dealt very bitterly with me." She says, "I went out full, and the Lord has brought me home again empty. Why do you call me Naomi, since the Lord has testified against me?" I'm sorry, "since the Lord has testified against me, and the Almighty has afflicted me." Other translations say, "because the Almighty has made my life very bitter. The Lord has afflicted me. The Lord has caused me to suffer. The Lord has turned his back on me. The Lord has brought me misfortune. The Lord has sent me such tragedy and calamity." But what she didn't know, what Naomi didn't know, was that God had a miracle. God had a miracle in store for her. And had she not tasted bitterness where she went, she might have never come back. Had she found prosperity, riches, and goodness where she had gone to escape the famine, she would have had no reason to return to Bethlehem. But God had a miracle. And God was going to take her daughter, not one of the children of Israel, her daughter-in-law, not of the children of Israel, and put Ruth into the line of Jesus Christ, the Messiah. God had something much better for her, but she had to experience bitterness to get there. And some of you tonight are sitting in Maras. Some of you tonight have named your life bitter. Or you have named different parts of your life bitter. But God would say to you tonight, don't name it bitter. Don't name it Mara. Because I have a miracle still in store for you. So in verse 24, the story goes on. And the people complained against Moses, saying, "What shall we drink?" Now, I'm not going to say there's never a time to bring complaint against leadership, because we are human and we do make mistakes. And we do overlook things. But it should have been pretty obvious that Moses didn't part the Red Sea. Are you with me? I mean, it should have been like after the 10 plagues of Egypt, they should have got that, like, it wasn't done by a great graphic artist. This wasn't just a good YouTube video. This is like really happening. Moses just isn't like really clever and he's just tricking all of us. I mean, this is really going on. And when they walk through the Red Sea, something should have been going on in their hearts going, like maybe God, he might be involved here. But they complained against Moses. But Moses did the right thing in verse 25. It says, "So he cried out to the Lord, and the Lord showed him a tree. And when he cast it into the waters were made sweet. Now, four things about this. First of all, it's in response, you'll notice, to prayer, not murmuring. Now, I don't know if you're like me, but I have tried to move God's hand and tried to get God's attention by throwing fits. Has anybody else ever done that? Now, come on. If you've done that, raise your hand. Some of you are too holy. You don't do that. That's fine. I have thrown myself on the ground. Not literally, but you know what I mean. Like, God, I'm so mad. I'm so upset. Like, God, I can't take this. God, I have had it. Man, this is too much. God, I am done. He could care less. How many of you have found that out? He doesn't care how much you throw a fit. It's extremely frustrating. It's one of the shortcomings of his character, is that he won't give in to our fits and our bad attitudes. So it's in response to prayer. Secondly, it's miraculous. He tells them, take the tree, throw it into the water. It wasn't a natural occurrence. Moses didn't know from his wilderness lessons that he already knew that if you take this tree, put it in this water, it'll all be sweet. No, it was a miracle. God has miracles for you. Thirdly, it was near at hand. The tree was right there. God said, take the tree right there, throw it into the water. And sometimes the solution for our bitterness is near at hand. Sometimes it's like, well, husbands, have you tried loving your wife as Christ loved the church yet? Or have you tried, like, being a good employee? Or if you try tithing, sometimes the solution to our bitterness isn't some far away, complex, Albert calculus kind of thing, and I'll get there. Sometimes the solution to your bitterness is near at hand. And you need to look around and say, God, am I just not doing something that you've told me to do? But the tree also symbolizes something a little bit deeper and may I say a little bit harder. And that is, the tree is also a type of Jesus Christ and his cross. And so when Moses was taking the tree, he was showing a picture of what would be happening in Calvary thousands of years from then, that God was going to take the tree, God was going to take the curse, and he was going to throw it into the bitter waters of your life and my life, and he was going to make something sweet out of something that was bitter, which was our sin, which was our inability to save ourselves, which is our inability to get to heaven without Jesus Christ. He was going to take the tree and throw it into that bitterness, and he was going to make it sweet. But here's something else about the cross. We're also called to pick up our cross daily and follow him. And sometimes in the bitterness and the disappointments and the places where life throws you the curveball and you're trying to figure out, what do I do with this situation in my life? It's not turning out the way I want it to. Sometimes a solution is just to die to yourself and to die to your desires, even if they're godly desires, even if they're righteous desires, just to die to yourself and say, okay, God, this is where I find myself right now. I'm in this bitter water. I'm drinking this bitter water. It tastes really lousy. But I'm just going to die to myself. I'm going to die to my expectations, and I'm going to have to walk into this, and I'm going to have to ask Christ to give me the grace to walk through this, to give me the grace to be Jesus in this unfair, unjust, fallen situation. And when you do that, God somehow takes that circumstance, which hasn't changed, and He makes it sweet. And He makes it drinkable. And He actually gives you, through that situation that is so bitter and maybe even horrible and awful, gives you a drink that sustains you and allows you to keep going through the wilderness of life. So the water was made sweet. And then it says that in verse 25, there He made a statute and an ordinance for them, and there He tested them. God was testing them. Blake talked about that last week and said, if you diligently heed the voice of the Lord your God and do what is right in His sight and give ear to His commandments and keep all His statutes, I will put none of the diseases on you which I have brought on the Egyptians, for I am the Lord who heals you. Now, I don't believe that this is a promise of perfect health at all times. But what I do think it is it's God showing that He can either take that which is good. The Nile River was good. It fed the whole nation of Egypt, and He can turn it into a curse. He can turn it into blood because of their disobedience. Or He can take our maras and turn it into sweet waters. But the touchstone, the thing that changes it, is obedience and trust. And then we'll finish up with verse 27. Then they came to Elim, where there were 12 wells of water and 70 palm trees. So they camped there by the waters. Elim was only 2 hours away. And I'm not going to tell you how many hours you are away from the Elims in your life, but there are Elims. There are places of water. There are places of goodness that God has for you. And as you walk through your wildernesses, you have to believe that there are Elims. They are there. And even though right now it seems like there's no water, even though right now it seems like the only water you're finding is the bitter water, there are Elims for you. But you notice in that verse, it says, and they camped there. You see that? I mean, now if you had to make a choice here of the story we've covered so far, you can camp in the 3 days of no water. How many of you want to camp there? No takers. Or you can camp by the bitter waters. And let's just say they haven't turned sweet yet. How many of you want to camp by the bitter waters? How many of you want to camp in Elim? Yeah. Come on. I want my whole life. God, I want my whole life to be in Elim. But I want you to notice something. Other Scriptures tell us that they camped in Elim. They stayed there for 3 weeks. Man, it must have been nice. The water's flowing. The palm trees are there. You're getting some shade. It's like it was an oasis out there. It was like going to a resort hotel. But there's only one verse about Elim. But look at all the verses there was about the no water, about the bitter water. And it's a reminder to us that God can do more in your life through 3 days of no water experiences. God can do more in your life by bringing you through bitter water experiences than in 3 weeks at a resort. Everyone say, bummer. Why don't you stand to your feet, and Brandon, I think, and some of our musicians are close by. tonight is, as I've shared, and I'd like our altar team, any altar team members, healing room members, pastors, elders, come on up here to the front. As we've talked tonight, undoubtedly, it's reminded you of situations in your life where there's no water. It's reminded you of...
We hope that this message has spoken something personal to you. If you would like more information about our church family or service times, please call us at 303-424-2121 or visit us at our website, www.fbci.org. Faith Bible Chapel currently meets in our Family Worship Center, located on the corner of 62nd Avenue and Ward Road.